Hi everyone, welcome to Amperity Advocacy Media. This is the Journey Series podcast, season four. I'm Mark, a brown man with black glasses, black and white beard. I'm bald. Today I'm wearing a brown shirt and we're in our home office.
And I'm Crystal. I have brown hair, brown eyes, and today I'm wearing a pink sweater. It's kind of chilly also. What have to get? Oh, you already said we're in our home office, so never mind.
And today we're speaking with Sherry Dodderer, who's an educator and will share some of her journey of how that affects her and her kids in terms of neurodiversity and disability. And hi, Sherry.
Hey, how are you guys today? It's great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Thank
Thank
you
you
for
for
joining
joining
me.
us. So I guess I will follow what you said. I'm Sherry Dodderer. I wear glasses. I am fortunate that my glasses still correct my vision because my vision gets worse every year. So I'm just fortunate that I can still use a computer and work. So I just thank God and praise God for that. I have had blonde hair my entire life. I've never colored it. So what you see is what you get. And I wear purple and green most of my days, but today I picked purple. So it's a very plum color tank top with a jacket over top. So that's what you see on the screen, and I'm ready to share a little bit more about my journey. But one thing I also wanted to add, I am in my home office as well. This morning it started out at 35 degrees here, and I just checked. It says on the thermostat that it's now 40. What is it where you are?
It's the same act. Well, it was this morning. It's climbing, but not as fast as it does in summer. It's slowly inching up.
It started as a complete surprise. I had no inclination that was even gonna be cold this morning. I forgot to look at the weather last night, and it was crazy. I was like, Mark, turn on
Yeah, consider last week it was 72, you know?
So tell us more about your journey, Sherry, and does the cold is the cold something that affects you and if as you go through your day?
Sure. My journey began really. I was sitting here in my office. I was working on an OT evaluation for a kiddo that I had done in school that day. So I was processing all the scores and the results. And I noticed that he was extremely struggling extremely with spelling. He was having trouble remembering his letters, and he was just having one of those typical kids that I would get a referral for struggling with handwriting. His handwriting was very illegible, but there came a creepy door opening, and in pops my fifth grader, my daughter. And she's crying, and I'm like, what's wrong? What happened? I can't spell, Mom. I can't spell. And I looked at her. I looked at what I was doing, and I went, what? Because my daughter is a gifted child. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm working with kids with learning disabilities. I know what to do with them, but how can a kid who's gifted have trouble with spelling? This doesn't compute to me. And I mean, her visual spatial skills were of that of an astronaut, I had found out with some of the testing that we had been doing. And it started me on this journey of why she could have this disability. And I came to find out with the research that I did that 6.4% of kids that are gifted have a learning disability. And most of the time, that learning disability is in handwriting and writing skills. And I went, oh, isn't this interesting? Even to this day, she is now 28. She still struggles with spelling, but she has mastered word processing. So it doesn't impact her like it does the kids with learning disabilities who struggle with experience over time to even accommodate to a lot of the assistive technologies. She also now writes code for Python. I'm like, oh, yeah, wow. You are definitely out of my league, child. What? How did I get blessed with you? So both of my children write computer code today. My son, whom at the time we had no idea, but today we know what the diagnosis is. So my son and my daughter are 5 years apart. 5 years, 6 years, 5 years, I think it is. Anyway, the amount of time doesn't matter. But so and they were born like within the same week. And of course, it was Labor Day. So I say I tried Labor Day twice and missed, but that's okay. But anyway, my son was always kind of on the quirky side, another brilliant kid, but not gifted. He didn't have the drive that a gifted child would have, but he always had some struggles. And I thought, well, maybe he has some high level autism spectrum disorder. No, that didn't work. And then I noticed something that kind of reminded me of like a petit mal seizure. And then I'm like, no, the EEG said, no, it's not epilepsy related. We come to find out that he has Tourette syndrome. And early on his Tourette's, he was ticking at a much slower rate. Then he got the COVID vaccine and it just blew up. So now, probably around 5 o'clock in the evening, so he can handle it throughout the day. He will tick some, but around 5 o'clock in the evening, for a few hours, it's constant. And so he's been trying to learn how to do certain tasks in that 5 to 9 range to help reduce the ticks. So he does a lot of drumming. He was a drummer before and he started like smacking himself with sticks and things like that. So we have gotten him the electronic guitar, I mean the electronic drums. So yes, he's still using sticks, but we've also like he now like pads himself or something that he doesn't hurt himself as badly, but he's never reached out to harm someone else unless they happen to be on the end of a tick that happened to go their direction. It was never anything intentional, but he has given himself bites and beat the wall to a point that we've been concerned about what he's doing to himself. So he works on computers as well. He does computer code for web design. He is my webmaster. And so I've been fortunate that I have these gifted kids at home, but they gave me this brilliant exposure to make connections to the kids I was seeing at school, and I would come home, ask them questions, and then go back to school and then try it out with the kids. And what I found was the same struggles with spelling that this group had, this group also had. And so it really started to go, what is the problem here? And where is the disconnect? When I started, there was nothing out there to help kids with spelling. Today, fast forward 12 years, we now are passing laws for structured literacy across the nation. And so there was stuff in the works that just wasn't published. I didn't know about it at the time. So I was creating things that I understood as an OT, which do help the kids. And a lot of that involves motion. So I involve motion with a lot of the activities that I do to work with the kids. And I know with a multisensory part of structured literacy, they also do motion as part of their multisensory part. One thing that I do differently is I incorporate both sides of the body at the same time. So when I am working on a kiddo, I'm just temporarily going to take off my glasses. I have this word enough that I teach kids. I do have an entire alphabet, but enough was the first one that I did. And the reason I'm taking my glasses off is so I don't knock them off. So I had a child who was struggling to learn some of his sight words. Enough is one of those sight words, because it, when you think about it phonetically, it's E-N-U-F. But of course, that's not how it's spelled. And so I was like, okay, how can I help him? Doing some study in the way the brain works, in addition to what I had learned in school. And one of those things was sequencing with motion. And so I said to him, I said, what do you always have with you that we can look at you to try and help you with some of these words that you're struggling with? And he wanted to learn the word enough that day. So E is the eyes. So you point with both hands to your eyes. N, nose, point with both hands to your nose. O, open your mouth, kind of like put both hands at your mouth, but don't put your fingers in your mouth. Your chin is shaped like a U. So I kind of do both hands at the same time, even though one is the correct direction and one is backwards. It's still simulating both sides of the brain at the same time. And then it's give me your hand. So we do a cross, but I try to emphasize the right first, because you always want to shake with the right. And then high five. So we do a high 10, really, a high 10. And so this little boy started doing this activity with this word, other words, and we call it the body sentence alphabet. And he just started to learn all of his sight words after we created the entire alphabet together. And I went, I'm onto something here. I wonder how this can help. And then we were talking about homophones. How do we deal with those? And I tried to include motion with those. It didn't work quite as well, but he got some concepts from it by going through motions that go along with it. Like we have steel like a steel beam and steel like steal a car. And we made ourselves look like a steel beam. And then when we went to steal, we went and jumped over something. So we're going to steal the whatever it is. And we took that and we created several different things, and they're in my book. And so those are page 156 and 158, I think they are, in my book, which is Handwriting Brain Body Disconnect, which you can see right behind me. It's the white book. That was my first kind of put it all together book. I'm currently working on another book that I really delve a little bit deeper into this whole concept. And I've discovered tier one, tier two, and tier three interventions to help kids, whether your whole classroom environment, small groups, or one-on-one, Yes, sometimes you can use the same task, but sometimes the way you approach it and the way you use the task gets a little bit different depending on the situation. I've also been working with a lot of literacy professionals and incorporating some of the strategies that I've been teaching into what they're doing as structured literacy programming and tweaking it just a little bit. For individual students, not all of them, but some of them just need a little extra tweak. And they're starting to understand and get a little bit more beyond what they had initially understood. My little guy that with the word enough, his brother was profoundly dyslexic, and he was using some of these strategies and starting to get them before I had to discharge him. Because I was no longer working in that school. So that's why I had to discharge him. COVID has created a lot of changes in my schedule, as it has with everybody else's. And so my journey began with my child asking questions. Now, meanwhile, I'm having a lot of personal things going on where I was feeling like I wasn't worthwhile. And in the mornings, you had asked me, I think before we started recording, what are some of my morning routines? And so some of my morning routine is the reading the Book of Esther. I don't know if you've read the Book of Esther. It's 10 chapters, and it really is the story in the Bible that doesn't say God. A king deposes his first wife and then all of a sudden decides, oh, I'm lonely, and then wants another one. And his second wife, it ends up to be a Jewish girl named Hadassah. But in that name in Persian was Esther. So she always went by Esther when she was in the Persian environment. When she was at home in the Jewish world, she would be called a Hadassah. And Hadassah ends up queen and saving the Jewish community. But several years ago, God gave me this download that said, there's more to the story that's not in the Bible. What I've come to find out is Artaxerxes, which was Xerxes' son. We don't know who his mother was. We're going to guess it was his first wife, but it could have been a concubine. Who knows? We really don't know who Artaxerxes was. Artaxerxes was probably like 3 or 4 years older than Esther. Xerxes was quite a bit older than the two of them. Obviously, if it was a son, had to be at least 12 or 13 years older. But they figure that Xerxes was 41, Esther was 14, and Xerxes was around 16, 17 when they met. Artaxerxes was struggling with reading, writing, and mathematics. They are predicting that because they have found in his DNA that he had neurofibromatosis, which one of the things that we know today about NF is that they most likely have dyslexia, dysgraphia, and dyscalculia. And God said, I have a story for you about Esther, Artaxerxes, and Xerxes. And I went, okay. So I'm writing a book, a historical fiction book, of the story that he's downloading. And one of the reasons that I believe Esther finds favor with the king is because she learned how to be a teacher and is able to teach this child, the children with disabilities. And there's more to the story, but I'm writing that, but I'm also finishing a project that I have been writing with another professional, and that is a book on mathematics and adaptive mathematics. And so I've been really delving into what does dyscalculia mean as well. So I have these touch on all three of the specific learning disabilities, And I'll tell you what, it has changed me from the inside out. I don't have the doubt that I had when I started reading Esther. I've been able to help my kids a whole lot better than what I was able to years ago. And that's not to say we don't still have our struggles, but we're doing a whole lot different.
Yeah, that's an inspiring message, you know, for people to look beyond what they may literally read in the Bible or anywhere else for that matter, and just dig deeper into and find the truth in wherever it lies for them. And so that's really inspiring that you were able to hear that message, and that's only half the puzzle. Right. Lots of people hear the message but choose not to go any further than that, and then you took that extra step, which is admirable.
Right. You know, I agree a lot with, you know, the things that we see, things that we hear, to listen to yourself and innately be able to follow that and build on that instead of just pushing it away and disregarding what you see or hear. And that's important when people can do that, no matter where it comes from.
Sorry. I believe that we are fully mind, body, and spirit. And that mind, body, and spirit is very similar to what I believe as a Christian, and that in the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. But mind, body, spirit, it's very similar in its approach to what I feel. And one of the things that I've read and I had to take to heart was Isaiah 6:8, and that says, "Here am I, send me." And he often asks us to be sent into the area we are feeling the most turmoil about. And one of the areas I felt like I had the most turmoil about in my life was public speaking and writing. And that's all I do today is public speak and write.
That's a really interesting concept. You know, I've been reading this book, The Psychology of Disability. And certainly, you know, paid attention to other philosophies, like philosophies of reincarnation, things like that. And, you know, there was a time when people believed that everything was kind of separate. We have Christians over here, we have these people over here, we have other people over there. We all have the truth, but it's exclusive to our club, right? And there's this interesting concept in the idea of reincarnation where one chooses the path that they're on. So whether it be a disability or not, whatever your own personal struggle is at the time, it's something that you chose to do, and you came into the world knowing that this was your mission, right? And I hear in that verse, which I'm familiar with, I just heard it, was send me. That's basically the same idea, just maybe in a different way.
Yeah. One of my favorite artists, Christian artists, is Casting Crowns.
I love Casting Crowns.
Mercy
Grounds.
me. Yeah. I think they sing a song, Send Me. And it's about that exactly. And the other one is Leaving 99, which is, you know, don't conform to everybody else. You know, you're,
it
you
sounds
know,
like Romans.
You have
Romans
follow,
12.
Yeah. You have to follow, innately follow what you intuitively know is right. And it's a hard one to do, but it's very possible.
And I think a lot of people get lost in the literalism, like, okay, I shouldn't follow bad people, but, or that it means just don't follow anyone, even if everyone is following this thing that seemingly looks good, doesn't mean it is good for you or no.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
so one of the things, I'm sorry, one of the things, I'm going to turn around just one moment. I mentioned the crown. I have a three-pointed crown as my logo. And the reason I have a three-pointed crown for my logo is because of us having body, mind, and spirit. Body, mind, and spirit represents the three points. And the particular colors are also biblical in nature. They represent three of the stones that are in Aaron's breastplate and three of the stones that are in the breastplate in Revelation. The uniqueness about them is that these particular three stones are the only precious stones that are available here on earth in 2024. They are an emerald, an amethyst, and a peridot. The emerald is about clarity. Ancient Egyptians would use emeralds to almost like a microscope or a telescope, where they put the emerald in front of them and it would clarify and straighten out, almost like binoculars do when you have to move them back and forth. So an emerald represents clarity. Amethyst represents abundance. Abundance in Christ, abundance on here on earth. And so abundance is that concept of we all can be podcast hosts. We all have some form of a disability because we are human. We all can overcome. So here am I, send me, abundance. And then the peridot is the only celestial stone. There, the earth has not manufactured a peridot. They all came from the asteroid belt. And so they're all celestial in nature. And so that whole connection between here and above is in that stone as well. And so it doesn't directly say mind, body, and spirit, but yet we have clarity of the mind, clarity of the body, clarity of the spirit, abundance of the mind, body, and spirit, and the connection to things other than ourselves, mind, body, and spirit. So I'll put
I
this back.
I remember several years ago, I was teaching missions in VBS in my church, and to kids that were like 8, 9, 10, around, you know, maybe younger than that. I don't, there was several different groups, but because there was like five different classes. But one of the things that I taught was LPS, which was Left Prayer Smiles, right? But also the whole thing of missions was about, you know, accepting different people in different nations and things like that. And at the time, my favorite singer was Rigel Lamba. And she had a song called Kaleidoscope. And so that's what I used because I love music. So everything I have to do is to do with music. But so what I used from that to teach them was, even though you look, there's a kaleidoscope and there's all this different distractions around you and all of these different experiences and people trying to take you away from your purpose and stuff like that, you have to be able to look through that kaleidoscope and push those away and that clarity you just spoke about. So it's interesting. And I wonder today if that resonated with any of them,
Yeah, the other thing that I think about with the peridot and the celestial beings is there's a section in Hebrews that talks about angels and that we are entertaining angels. And there's two songs that are out there. One was written by the Newsboys called Entertaining Angels, but there was another one written by Yvonne Hartman. And that one of all her songs is my favorite. Yvonne Hartman happens to be my sister. And she has written music with Matthew West. But Entertaining Angels was written before she met Matthew. And I got to say that it's still one of my favorite songs that she has written. And when I think about the people in this world, you don't really know which ones are angels in disguise. You could be an angel in disguise right now and testing me to make sure that I am speaking God's word the way I'm supposed to be speaking it.
And vice
We don't
versa.
know.
It could be the other way around too. You never know. So,
That's true. That's true. And even though I don't feel like an angel, there is a power of angels inside me because that spiritual warfare that goes around us is very prevalent from day to day.
right. And even though we don't feel like angels, we are to each other because he's using me as a his purpose for helping people, talking, to having conversations to help people like you or whoever I'm speaking with to come to a conclusion or understand a purpose he has. I'm just a vessel, right? And you're
Amen.
the same. Like you talk to me, and maybe I get something from it, and it awakens something in me. So we're all doing it to each other. We just don't realize it.
And then when I'm in schools and I'm helping teachers and I'm helping students, I don't necessarily talk like this, but it's something in the back of my mind that I think about all the time is what is that celestial connection and how do I best be my best so that I am doing what God wants me to do today? And some of the stuff that I am teaching when I'm working with kids that are struggling with writing, getting back to the disabilities part of it, I'm asking some questions that are impacting their spirit before I even work on the actual physical writing skills. And one of them is learning how to teach kids again how to ask questions. And I might ask a kid, what do you see? It doesn't matter what's on the page. What do you see? A lot of times when I'm talking to them, though, we're talking about, and I'm looking at elementary kids, we're talking about three-lined paper, the top line, middle line, bottom line, when they're learning how to write. I'll ask them, what do they see before I even go into teaching writing? Because I need to figure out if they understand what they're even looking at. And then we go into a discussion about what they're looking at before we ever even put any letters on paper, any sentences on paper. And yes, we have copying that we can demonstrate that they copy, but if they don't understand what they're looking at to begin with, they're not going to be able to write on the paper because they don't understand what they're doing. So that's one of the first things that I will ask kids is, what do you see or notice? And if you think about it, that's spiritual.
Definitely.
That's looking at the core. That's looking at their belonging. That's looking at their autonomy. That's looking at what is going on inside them. It's also mind, because it's giving that practical, those practical neurological connections chance to work and grow.
Right.
It's also body, because yes, we have that physical cycle called the sensory motor system. So it's all three.
Yeah. And it's also teaching them at that young, impressionable age that they're valuable.
Amen.
And empowering them to look for that in other people.
Exactly. That's so important, what you're doing. And other people are following in that too. Because we talked about previously, you know, when we grew up, that wasn't there. No one cared what we were experiencing, and when they were teaching us, it was all about what they knew and how they were told to teach us.
Yeah,
they didn't care about that.
It was very much we're teachers up here and your students down here, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we both had really good teachers, mm-hmm. and there definitely are those out there, but there are a lot that aren't.
Yeah. And it's sad, you know, that same philosophy of, you know, we're in charge and we're going to do this and this, and, you know, that also spreads to what happens at home, you know.
Yeah, it does.
You know, same thing, like, we had great parents, you know, or we have great parents, but, you know, just, it was a different time, and people knew how to do different things and were socially and from leaders and governments and stuff like that were told, this is the way you do things, this is how you treat people. And like we talked before about how we already have in us how to innately treat people. But we've all been told so much differently how to do it.
Yeah.
And we have to get back to that.
Yeah.
So I appreciate people like you that understand that and are making a difference.
It's definitely not the fault of any of those people back then, but we're blessed today to have a lot of tools and a lot of information out there. And thankfully, there are people who are very vocal and use all these platforms for good, to spread the kind of messages that we need to grow as people. And they just didn't have that back then.
No, they didn't. And even when I was in college the first time, it was very difficult to get anything out of a library. It was much more difficult than it is today. Today, the library is online.
Yeah, right. Or on your phone.
Yeah.
But also the other thing is, like the teachers or whoever was in charge, they were operating from a broken set of instructions. So that's the way they were taught. And through their own pain, there's 30 kids that they can take it out on.
Yeah. There's another strategy that I use, and it's with a mirror. And I always keep the mirror on my desk because it reinforces some of that, where I came from and where I want to be and where I want to go. And what I do with the mirror is I have the kids look at themselves. I have them take a look at their skin, their eyes, their nose, their eyebrows, their ears, their mouth. Look at the lines around that. Compare one side to the other within themselves, not compare other people. So looking at themselves, and I end with them looking themselves in the eye and saying, I love you. How many kids today can really look at themselves and say, I love you sincerely? How many adults today can look at themselves in the mirror and honestly say, I love you to themselves? Society has gone absolutely crazy with the influence and comparison of others.
Yeah.
And it's really, thank you again for the work you're doing. It's really important to get them at that age, because once you get to like my age or our age, it's a lot harder to go backwards and try to rebuild.
But it's possible. But it's possible. You can change your life at any age.
Yeah. But I think he's just getting at that, you know, if we had innately, and our parents or teachers had innately just done with us and raised us in a way, you know, maybe it wouldn't be so difficult now to unlearn those things.
But yeah. Having said that, everything is kind of a mixed blessing in a way, because if that hadn't happened, if our lives hadn't happened the way they happened, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be doing right. this podcast.
Right.
You wouldn't be here, you know?
Correct. But think about it. If some of the stuff that's going on in our society would have happened when we were kids. And what's happening in society today is changing the way our kids are going to be when they are 60. But history does always repeat itself. There's always this cycle that always comes back. We just have to accept the way things are at that time in our lives. Yes, before the 1960s, 1970s were over, the ideal of punishing with a belt, yardstick, whatever, was the norm. Now, heaven forbid you even think about touching a child in that form of punishment, but yet the punishment that's happening today is happening from peer to peer is a lot worse than discipline like that. Sometimes I feel, not always, sometimes it's the other way around, but sometimes if discipline is done correctly, it's supposed to be done in love, and it's not always done in love.
Yeah. Some another thing that you have to sort of examine for yourself and figure that out, because definitely discipline as a form of retribution for maybe the ways you've been hurt is not proper. It's not right.
No. It's a lot of things about the way human existence is that will be healed when we reach our second life.
Yeah, we talked a lot about the, not only the things that were told to us from the top down, but also the generational trauma that people experience, and trying to stop that cycle, you know, and that includes disability, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different minority groups and as well, in every family structure, I think there's some degree of generational trauma, so we just have to be able to recognize those things and say, okay, yeah, that was kind of wrong and hurtful and not helpful. And then there were things that were helpful and they will stick,
And
but
you just pray that the things that were helpful do stick.
right.
Yeah.
There was definitely a lot that did was wonderful and should stay around,
Right.
but there was also,
Yeah, and some of that I feel is kind of getting pushed to the side a little bit, and being an advocate to bring back some of the positive takes a strong person. So if there's anybody out there that's listening to this podcast, be that strong person, because Isaiah has, or God has put in Isaiah's scripture, "Here am I, send me." What's he putting in your heart to send you out to do?
So, if you can tell us more about the techniques you use in the classroom to help students.
Sure. So the writing has a wide variety of non-academic parts to it that impact your writing skills. One of them is visual perception, another one is motor function, and another one is memory skills. When I'm looking at kids and I see some deficits with visual spatial awareness, I will do activities that help build that. And so there's some subcomponents of visual spatial skills that I work with the kids on. One of them is understanding figure ground. Figure ground is when you have two things on top of one another, like two different shapes. For example, if you think about an envelope really is a square and a triangle together. Look at thing at as two separate parts and then putting it together to create the envelope. Teaching those overlapping things and how teaching how to pull it apart and see it for its pieces is one of the parts of visual perception that kids with disabilities need explicit, systematic, cumulative, and multisensory approach to help them understand. And those are the four key areas of structured literacy: explicit, systematic, cumulative, and multisensory. So figure ground is only one area. I mentioned about three-lined paper. Some kids use two-lined paper. Some kids use one-lined paper. Some kids use four lines of on their paper. They need to understand what they're looking at. They need to understand what goes where on the paper, no matter what number of lines there are to write the letters. They need to understand that paper first before you can move them to a much more advanced style, which would be a single line paper, would be the most advanced. Knowing how high to make the different letters is something that they need. And part, I mentioned memory as part of their deficit. One of the biggest problems with kids with writing early on is remembering B, 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 B. Which way does that letter go? Does that okay? So teaching them strategies to understand what makes the B versus its mirror image, the D. And so we often do bed, B, B, and then D. And then we flip it upside down for P and Q, because P and Q are the other are two other ones. Two and five are another set of pairs that kids get confused it. And we talk about one has a loop and one has a hat. So the two has a loop on the bottom, the five has a hat on top. UNN can sometimes confuse kids, as well as things like HNR, like which one stops at the top, that the N, the H, the R, which one is it that has the longer stem? Is it the H or the N? And so we're helping them remember and giving them little sing-song techniques to help them remember what letter is which, helps them with automaticity of recalling how to write the letter, then how to write words. And I used the enough analogy earlier, the eyes, nose, mouth, under chin, give me a hand and high five. That's mm-hmm. another idea that and technique. But really, the first thing I try to get kids to really understand is what to do with the lines on the page. Mm-hmm. Then talk them through how to remember how to write each individual letter, how to put them together. If I've got a kid who's struggling, who fatigues very easily, I will move them to cursive because cursive is much easier with kids who fatigue. Mm-hmm. With kids who have motor function issues that fatigue easily, a lot of times cursive is an easier way to write. Sometimes it's not, but sometimes it is because you don't have to lift your pencil up with every letter. And right. so then we have kids with dyslexia. There's been research to prove that cursive works better with kids with dyslexia because they can see it as a word because it's all one flowing pencil stroke versus these letters that are just kind of set in front of them and they can't distinguish the spaces between them. Mm-hmm. Speaking of spaces, we use techniques like spaghetti and meatballs. So I'm not talking, we get out and we cook spaghetti and we have a meal. No, I'm not talking that. I'm talking the idea of a line versus a ball, which is how far apart do you space different things between letters? There needs to be just a line length. Between words, we need a ball, like a meatball. So we need more space between the words than we do the individual letters that create the word. And so spaghetti and meatballs is another technique. And I check them and I have them check themselves. And a lot of the whole idea of belonging and autonomy is that they need to check themselves. So they get to check themselves on their writing skills. One of the techniques I do with the spaghetti and meatballs is I turn the paper upside down. So after they've written, we turn it upside down. So they have a little bit more difficult time looking at the letter itself, and they're just looking at the spaces on the page. How many spaghettis can you draw between these two letters? Is it big enough to make a meatball? Or is it only like two or three spaghettis? And so we draw spaghetti and meatballs, and we turn it around. And do we have spaghettis, but we have like three spaghettis inside that word so that, like, for instance, the word the, is there three spaghettis between the T and the H that make it look like this is a single word? And then over here, we have the word he. So spaghetti and meatballs can be used both ways to reinforce. Force practice, we use dice. Dice, we have them roll the dice, and we've already predetermined that they need to practice the letter D. The dice tells them how many times. We as the therapist or the teacher are going, we pray for six. Oh, they've rolled a one. Well, you got to get it right, but you have to get one right. So if they practice and they're still getting it wrong, they do have to do another one. So they have to come up with one that's correct, not six, like would be the other choice if they rolled a six. Or we could have a Dungeons and Dragons dice and make them do 20.
Yeah. So Can you talk a little bit in our pre-discussion? You spoke about when you were younger and your uncle and how that led you also to do what you do.
My father and his younger brother are 11 and a half years apart. God bless my grandmother having kids that far apart, but that's what happened. That's what happened. They have the same biological parents. It wasn't that kind of a situation. It just happened that way. And so my dad, being the elder brother, he got married, and I was 10 when my uncle was 20. Okay, so I was 10 years younger than him. So looking at it from a generational standpoint, you figure it out. I can't remember how old he was when I actually was born, but he had gotten married I'm going to date myself, 1973. And this happened in 1974. 1974, my father and somebody gets a phone call. I think my father got that. It took the phone call. There's been an explosion. Your brother's been in an explosion. And this is the days long before 911, long before all the structures that we have in place today. We lived about 10 miles from where he lived. He lived two houses away from my grandparents, his parents. And so we all get in the car this happened like right before bedtime. So I think we were getting in pajamas and stuff like that at the time of the phone call. And we get in the car and we drive by the ambulance station to get to where we were going. And the ambulance had not left. They couldn't figure out where to go. Like I said, before 911, before all the roads were marked the way they are today, the ambulance hadn't left. So my mother gets out of the car, talks to them, makes sure that that's where they are planning on going. The ambulance leaves in front of us because my mom is now directing them where to go. So the rest of us are in the car. I have two siblings. So there's three kids in the back seat, my dad driving. We get to the section where my grandparents and my aunt and uncle lived. There's basically one road. It goes down into an area next to a creek. So there's like one road in to a whole bunch of bungalows, which my uncle and my grandparents had converted their summer bungalow into 12-year living. And my dad knows the area because that's where he grew up. He takes the alternative non-road. So we're on this bumpy road and we're bumping and we're carrying absolutely horrible road. But we end up pulling up in front of my uncle's house, and the ambulance is still up at the top of the hill outside the thing because they can't get in. The fire trucks can't get in. So there's this fire going in his house. Nobody can get to the house. There's too much stuff around. Long and short of it is, my uncle ended up living 8 days after the explosion until he passed away. And as a result, my grandmother started working at the county home as a transporter for physical and occupational therapy. Needed something to do with her time because otherwise she would have dwelled in her grief. And in the summers, she would take my sister, brother, and I along. So, you know, by that point in time, I'm like 12, 13. My sister is like 6, 7. So imagine this little girl who can barely see over the wheelchair is pushing the wheelchair. It was a If I look back, it was adorable, you know, looking at my sister. But I liked to go over into the occupational therapy and help her instead of transport. Today, I'm an occupational therapist. I still say this a lot. I is because I got to see some of the crafty stuff. I always loved crafts when I was younger. Can't say that I get to do many crafts today, but I did enjoy crafts when I was younger. But I did do the transport, so I got some experience and exposure at that point in time. It kind of went away when I was in high school, because I did not participate in the transporting. I had other stuff I was working and doing. And I went to college. I got a biochemistry degree and realized there's nothing I can do with a bachelor's of biochemistry. What do I want to do with my life? So I had one of those another experiences where I went, what am I doing? Where am I going? What's happening in my life? And my girlfriend, who is a physical therapy assistant, said, you sound like an OT. I went, what's an OT? I had totally forgot what happened as a child. And as I went back to OT school and started making those connections, I was like, oh, that's why. And so I really started trying to figure out what happened to my uncle with that explosion. What was it that they were saying? How did that relate? And so I've always been in neurology because of what happened to him. What happened to his brain was the thing that impacted me the most. Basically, he lost his frontal lobe in the explosion. And he was burnt and everything, but that never really stuck. But the neurology part stuck. And so I've always been into the neurology aspects. So I've done a lot of sensory processing education, neuroscience education, neurobiology, psychology, and really trying to help kids from that aspect. And I started in adults. So I worked in adults in stroke and dementia, Parkinson's, and that kind of field for several years in my first 10 years in the career. And then I switched to peds.
So I have an interesting question for you. How do you separate the community of science and neurology and figuring out the brain from that perspective, and then also the spirituality and innately being able to experience the world and understanding that some of those things are just naturally already there?
When I was in college for my biochemistry degree, they had come around going, we need math teachers, we need science teachers. And I got terrified. But in my heart, I always knew that there was teaching that was going to be part of my life. Mm-hmm. And I think when I met a teacher who she and I clicked like this, and now we talk like twice a week, mm-hmm. learning some of the things that she would learn in college, it just drove me to learn more. And so when I look at what I've learned as a neuroscientist and a neurology geek, and then applied that to how does it manifest and how is it looked at and how is it taught to others, I went, oh, teachers aren't taught anything about the neurobiology. That's where I can fit in.
Yeah.
And the, like I said before, we're blessed today to have a lot more information shared and a lot more access to different voices. And you realize how, in some regard, science and expert opinions have been used to pull the wool over our eyes and hide us or make it harder to find the truth about how we're all connected now, how everything is connected, and deny this whole spiritual aspect of humanity.
Yeah, no, we can't deny the spiritual because it's all part of our being. If we didn't have the spiritual, we wouldn't be alive.
Right. And that it's definitely important that we, you know, there's different religions, different beliefs and stuff like that to come to those conclusions and understanding and things. You know, there's some good lessons and good philosophies in every religion. But, you know, there's no wrong answer about it. But it's the spirituality in that religion that is what matters. Right. The kindness and being able to connect with people
right.
is what matters. Forget the division part of it, you know, in certain aspects, you know, and just get back to what we innately, our humanity is supposed to be doing.
And yeah. For a long time, and a little bit today, it's still around where there are people so invested in science they deny, vehemently deny the possibility of this, you know, but slowly, I mean, there was a time where things like prayer and meditation and any kind of spirituality or the possibility of other planes of existence and states of being were just denied and dismissed. And fast forward today, when quantum physics is a thing, it's just now they're gaining an understanding. Oh, we didn't know what we're talking about. No.
Yeah. Do you know, in quantum physics, there's proof that what we see that has happened in our world, there's also connections in the quantum physics realm. My nephew studied quantum physics for several years. He's a aerospace engineer. I don't understand how that can be. No, planetary science. That's what his major is. Anyway, he had a whole bunch of the little minute things that he would talk about. And I don't know what part of it is. But I think it was the proton has a cross on it, in it. A proton has a cross in it. Who'd have figured?
Yeah,
there's a lot of things that have so many connections, and people just haven't put it together, you know. And some things are not supposed to be put together, you're just supposed to innately know, you know. But anyway, we can Correct. Have such a long conversation about those things, but.
Yeah, if it goes on much longer, I'm going to have to change my position. I'm going to have to.
I know, right? Like, okay, I have a purpose, and what I was led to is not correct. Like, there's a lot more that I'm supposed to be doing. So I love what we're doing now, talking to so many different people and making those connections to help people. Like I said before, come to their conclusions of their purpose and helping me see mine. So I appreciate those conversations.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful connection to this conversation. Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you too. And thank you.
So is there anything you'd like to talk about or promote or?
Sure. I have a checklist on my website. So if you go on to sherrydotterer.com, that's CHERIDOTTERER.com, CHERIDOTTERER.com. And on the header, there's a thing that says, grab my checklist. And on that checklist talks a little bit about the six steps that we use to help our students. And I didn't even really talk about those today, but once you download that, you'll get an email course. So I send out emails to you over a month's time, and that course will share a little bit about what that means. And we talk a lot about the mind and how the mind impacts our ability to learn. I don't necessarily go into the whole spiritual part of it, and I don't go directly into a lot of techniques in that particular handout, but that'll give you listeners some ideas of how we think about delivering our instruction with our students. And from that, I share a little bit about my podcasts and some of the workshops that we do after you've listened to some of that. So I have two podcasts. One is called The Writing Glitch, and that one's about what are some strategies that are out in the world. So that's an interview-based podcast where I'm talking to people like you're talking with me about what are some strategies out there that can help kids with reading, writing, and math, and how they apply it and they write it down. And Tier 1 Interventions podcast really is focused on the core classroom. Tier 1, 2, and 3 are a model that is done by the education world, and that is whole classroom, small group, and one-on-one instruction. And we've really been focusing in that particular podcast on what can we do in the whole classroom to keep kids in the whole classroom, because once we pull them out into small groups and one-on-one, they're missing core instruction. And right. How can we keep them there? And what are some activities to re-engage kids? What are some activities that create novelty, which means newness to the day-to-day life? Because granted, day-to-day life and going to school isn't the most thrilling thing in the world for kids or adults. It's fun when we have those special days. Those are the days that they remember, the special days. That mundane part of every day, they don't necessarily remember. How can we help them remember?
Anything else?
It looks like you have some books behind you there. Do you want to also talk to those?
Sure. I mentioned why I have a crown, and that is my logo, and that is where my heart lies, is that whole idea of mind, body, and spirit. The first book that I have behind me is The White One. That's Handwriting Brain Body Disconnect. I mentioned it earlier. That's my book. The one next to it in green, I'll get my hand going in the right direction, is Making Math in Ears. That's written by my co-author, Jonalisa Panzik. And she and I are writing a book together called Math Disconnected, and that will be out probably in the fall of the year. And Tier 1 Interventions podcast really is some of the material that's going to be part of the book.
Keep us updated on all that information. And when the book comes out, because we have on our website, we have resources for the disability community.
Beautiful.
So, let us know.
Beautiful. I have a bunch of authors' books that have to do with dyslexia, dysgraphia, and dyscalculia on my website as well. So yeah, I like it when we're collaborating and sharing each other's resources on our websites.
For sure. It's so interesting. We talk with people and they want us to share their books and their resources and stuff like that, but then we never hear from them again, or they don't mention us in anything. It's
We'll have to make that different here at cherrydutter.com.
Yeah. I appreciate that. No, I wasn't complaining. Like I said before, the purpose of this is to make those connections, right? But it's kind of like people of the world today, they expect you to do all the work and they're going to pull from you. But it needs to be like a collaboration of helping each other, being kind to each other, and working together.
And a lot of the philosophy of many people today seems to be, okay, well, I'm really excited to be on your podcast or be part of this project. And then that's done. Let's move on to the next thing. And
yeah.
This checklist of what they've got to do to, like, they have this idea of their career, and I've got to check on this and this and this and this. And it's just moving on from podcast to podcast and person to person.
We'll have to reverse it. We'll have to have you on the writing glitch.
That would be interesting.
Well, I don't know. Well, she definitely has better writing than I do. My writing is
physically writing, or
but the whole purpose of the podcast is to share some of your resources that you're helping with people with disabilities.
Yes. We can for sure do that.
So everybody's writing gets horrible in their adult years.
Anything else?
Well, we have ataxia, so it's kind of like MS and Parkinson's, and so we have tremors, and then I also have aphasia, so I can't always remember the words I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, about the writing, sometimes our writing, depending on the time of day, because, that matters.
Hormones. Hormones will make a big difference in your writing automaticity.
Yes.
My
personal pet peeve is when I get a form or some sort of form where it says, you must repeat your signature to authenticate, like, so they know you're actually the right person. But, like, or even at the bank, my signature changes from moment to moment. So I'm like, there's, I don't know.
And then what's funny about that, okay, let's, so they want the authenticity of your signature. But if your signature is never the same or you cannot repeat it, it's impossible. Then you look inauthentic.
But so, there's a thing, there's the actual study on the way people write. And there are things about the way you write certain letters that are typically similar. And so if they compare, they can pretty much tell that it was the same person or somebody different. It just depends on the way, how much pressure you're putting on the paper and how the C is really formed in my case with my first name, how your K is formed, how the M is formed. They're typically first letters are the same.
So there's so many different nuances and different things about, if you have tremors, you have, the pressure you apply to keep from shaking, that's going to make a difference. And then, like you said, the time of day is going to make a difference.
And the weather.
The utensil you're using, the kind of weather, yeah.
Yeah, do you use weighted utensils and weighted pencils and pens?
Yeah, we have to. I mean, if we don't care, if it's just R writing and, you know, we it's only for us. No, we don't take the time to do that. But, you know, normally if we're doing it for somebody else, we do.
But even still, no, we have to accept that certain things are the way they are, and you know, a lot of stress is relieved when we stop trying to uphold and trying to fix things to someone else's standard. You know,
Right.
Yeah.
we just have to
Yeah.
give ourselves grace in that way. You know,
Yeah.
you know.
You were speaking about the cursive and it being easier when you have what we have. I found through, say, I've had mine for 20 years. He's had his for 7 now.
How old am I? Yeah.
How old am I? I don't know. I can't remember anymore, right?
About 7 or 8, that
Yeah.
sounds about right.
So, when I was relearning how to write, right, I figured out in the process that cursive is the same thing. You don't have to lift your pen. And when you have ataxia and tremors,
Yeah.
the more you can do to not make yourself shake, it
Yeah.
kind of lift the top,
Right.
put up and down, you know, is
Put
better.
it down and keep it
So
there. Yeah.
it, you know, that was a big part of my relearning how to write. But then when I had my daughter, it was, you know, kind of sad, of course, to a lot of people, but that this generation is having a being taught, not being taught cursive
Yeah,
and what
it's
dislike.
not explicitly taught.
Yeah.
Neither is handwriting, really.
Yeah. So I made sure that I taught her what I knew, like because of that situation, not because it was, you know, not in date anymore, you know. But because I wanted her to know what I knew, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's important to learn some of those fundamental skills for anyone because, you know, God forbid something catastrophic should happen. That's all we're going to have to rely on,
Right.
right?
Right. Yeah. It's. And it's thinking about the simplicity for myself and my disability, and then thinking about if it was going to be easier for someone else today, and I get the younger generation, and God forbid if anything happened to them, and them not knowing that cursive was an option, or they didn't know how to already do it, you know,
Yeah.
it's a sad
Yeah.
thing. So I'm sorry, I had to.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. It's just sad that it has come to this, but there are rumors that cursive instruction is coming back across the country.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, that's the, you know, the silver lining. On this is that we also understand and appreciate that you know, everything is related, and I guess I'll relate this to addiction if I can, that you have to hit rock bottom before you can come out of it, right? So maybe we're just getting there.
Yeah,
And then it'll take that to wake some people up, the right people up.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But this has been a really good conversation. We have to eat, and then we have another meeting recording.
Well, and I'm going to need to be sitting soon, so I'm going to have to either put myself on mute and move the desk, or we'll have to end. So, But thank you very much for having me today. It has been a real joy to be able to talk from my heart and talk about all aspects of what I'm doing, not just the writing skills, because it's so much more than that.
Yeah, that's so important. Like building those connections of, we want to know, you know, what you're about and what you're interested in and stuff and what you're doing, teaching and stuff like that. But also we want to know like how we can connect on a spiritual level and understand.
I think we have today.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, thanks, Sherry, for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for watching, guys. And don't forget to encourage, educate, and empower someone today. Bye.
Bye.